You're listening to Transforming Insight, the podcast for anyone who has the ambition to transform their insight team and create an insight-driven organization. Your host is James Witcherly, Chief Executive of the Insight Management Academy and the author of the book Transforming Insight, The 42 Secrets of Successful Corporate Insight Teams.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest episode of the Transforming Insight podcast. This is episode 75, the penultimate one in season 10 of our podcast, and we're going to continue our theme of looking at the way in which Insight teams, their leaders, senior managers need to think about the products, the output from Insight teams. What is it that the rest of the organization sees, and how often should we refresh that, and how should we think about the right balance? Those of you that listened to the last episode of our podcast, episode 74, will remember that we'd moved on to the sixth P of the Insight Leaders Playbook, namely P for products. And I was encouraging everyone to think about the output that their Insight teams produce, what the rest of the organization sees, and not assume that the output that's been relevant in one period is automatically the optimal output in this current period or in the next period of time. It helps, I think, to categorize the output in different ways. You might want to think, for example, about the differences between the routine trackers that you do, your brand health trackers, your customer satisfaction trackers, the investigations into issues of the moment, the foundational pieces around things like customer segmentations, for example, or big picture knowledge pieces, and future looking work like trend forecasting, foresight of different sorts. But whatever framework you use, don't assume that the mix of products that you have, the mix of outputs, is necessarily the best mix or the mix which is most appropriate going forward. So to talk more about those topics today, as always, I've brought in a senior Insight leader, someone who's got great experience of managing Insight teams themselves, and indeed now going into other Insight teams and helping with their transformation. I'm joined by Claire Goff. Claire, I've known you as Insight leader at Waitrose and then Haleon in particular, great contributor to the IMA's Insight forums for many, many years, and indeed now an associate of the IMA as well. But do you want to tell listeners a little bit more about the career that you've had?
Absolutely. I'm really happy to, and I always enjoy our chats, James, and really appreciate the Insight Management Academy. I mean, I first came across the Insight Management Academy many years ago when I was leading Global Insight for SAB Miller, which then got taken over by AB InBev. I stayed with the Insight Management Academy when I headed up Insight at Daily Mail General Trust and then through Waitrose. And like you say, most recently headed up Insight for GSK, which became Haleon globally, and then effectively set up my own Insight consultancy, Insight in Focus, very closely associated with the IMA and helping businesses to transform their Insight functions.
Fabulous. So the focus that we've got today, I think, is almost at two levels, because when I wrote the Insight Leaders Playbook end of last year, brought it out earlier this year, as you know, I was thinking very much in terms of an Insight leader's constant responsibility, as I would see it, to think about the work of their Insight team, its impact in the organization, and how you move from whatever situation and state that your Insight team's in and its capabilities in at the moment to one where you can achieve more impact. But you and I were talking at Quirks London a few weeks back about the broader disruption in the Insight sector at the moment, challenges to headcount, to budget, to the number of senior roles in organisations. And I think it's almost that almost doubles the requirement for us to think about the way in which our Insight teams are operating and to think twice about the mix of output that we've got and whether that's still pertinent to the current situation or something, whether it's optimal. How do you think about those things?
I think it's challenging, really challenging for Insight at the moment. And the show of hands we saw when you asked those pointed questions about how many of you have lost team members, had budget cuts, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, was really telling. And I think as a leader in Insight, that means that you have to really stop and rethink what your Insight strategy is and most critically, what you want to be known for. And the future of the sector is changing. I mean, businesses are looking even more strongly towards Insight than they have ever in the past. The challenge is making sure as a lead in Insight that it's your team they're looking to and not others. we're really at an inflection point and insight teams need to step up. Businesses are constantly having to anticipate change now. They're having to think forward. They're having to react quickly, get on the front foot and navigate change. And COVID made that business as usual. There's also an increasing need for businesses to be much more human-centric. So it's not just about the customers or the consumers or the audience, but businesses are now starting to talk about needing to get a more holistic perspective rather than having to put together lots of data and insight from different silos themselves. Insight teams are brilliantly well-placed to do that for businesses. The challenge in the past has been that there's been separate data teams, separate research teams, insight teams, and really, you know, one source of the truth needs to be what insight teams are all about. The other challenge and the other opportunity, I would say, is the push from senior leaders now to have insight teams who they value more for their business partnership and leadership than their technical skills, combined with their ability to deliver kind of real-time granular data analytics to enable optimization of activation. So teams spanning from both strategic to tactical, which it varies by business and by organization, but it means that for an insight leader, actually thinking about what do you want to be known for? What are the key insight products that reflect your team is critical. Because those are the face of the team and those are the things that the business should value and want to retain.
Totally agree with that. And with your summing up of where we are at the moment, I don't mean to worry people. I'm certainly not trying to cast doubt on the ability of insight people and our ability to achieve impact and to do great things in organisations. But I do feel, as I've said on other podcast episodes, and we'll be saying next week again, I'm sure, on the roundtable episodes, that to your phrase, this is an inflection point and all the more need for insight leaders and all of us who care about insight-driven decisions and insight-led organisations to help sort of step up and shape the future of what corporate insight looks like. So, yes, I think we can think about this on two different levels, can't we? It's almost the business as usual requirement to think about the product set that an insight team has, if you're comfortable using that language, but also at this particular moment to think extra hard about what that product set needs to look like in the future. So what have you learned from the different roles that you've had? Because you've led some great insight teams in the past, insight teams with a lot of a high profile within the organisations and big organisations at that. But you'll have had to work very hard to make sure that that product set was optimal in those organisations that you led.
Absolutely. And I could tell you stories about every organisation I've been in, but I think there's probably a couple of stories that are most relevant. And you know, the insight products, that's what you're known for. And if you do it well as an insight leader, you can optimize your impact, not just with your immediate set of stakeholders, but across the company as a whole. So in insight products, you know, what your insight solutions are to common business issues. And done really, really well, insight products become more insight style. They're bigger than any particular member of the insight team. So I think probably one of the roles I had recently was, it started off as being at GSK and then GSK Consumer Healthcare demerged from GSK and became Haleon. And part of the leadership role there was innovating insights and analytics products globally. And why we wanted products was because we wanted in certain areas to be best in class, effectively have a competitive advantage. We wanted global consistency of language and learnings, and also wanted multiple people, hundreds of people across the business, to be able to self-serve insights so that we could increase the impact of insights. And probably one of my first learnings in doing that role is really to look and see where your products can have most impact. So the approach that me and the team I was leading took was we reviewed the ecosystem, basically. So did research on business stakeholders, not just within the marketing function, but also the finance function, the R&D function, and also the global insights community to understand, and we already had products, but to understand where there were unmet needs and within those unmet insight needs, where we had greatest opportunity to influence. And based on that, actually spec'd out a series of products, so a product pipeline, very broadly. And each of the products was a combination of, you know, either data or qual research, quant research, social listening, search, you know, the right combination of insight inputs to solve the business questions. And after having spec'd out a series of products, we then went and said, well, we want to be best in class and have a competitive advantage. So in Helium, we did what was probably the largest ever RFI across agencies and across component parts. Also partly a fishing expedition to find out what was the latest emerging techniques and best practice. And there were some brilliant, you know, capabilities out there, which are now becoming much more mainstream in terms of AI, semiotics at scale, etc. And that landscape assessment in terms of what was emerging in terms of best practice, innovative ways of quickly, in an agile sense, gathering data and doing insight, enabled us to kind of recount those products, identify which ones we felt we could do, i.e. they were feasible, given the capabilities available. And critically, we also mapped them out versus what business impact they would have. So what level of decisions would they influence? How much investment would they influence? So what would be the return on investment of the cost of delivering the product? And then went started developing, basically. So we got two agile teams, picked two products, went, did end market project pilots, iteratively developed the products, seeing as we went how much traction they got and how much business impact they had, tracking the decisions that those products influenced. Once we had a viable product that was, you know, paying back, it was effectively influencing more than it was costing us to deliver. Quite a lot more, by the way. These products had a fantastic return on investment. We started to scale them. So absolutely developed up the comms plan, understood the different audiences, what we wanted them to feel, think and do, understood the regularity of communications needed to influence those audiences to adopt the products, had our KPIs to see how quickly those products were being adopted, and most critically made sure that the products were integrated into decision-making. So, you know, mapped out what the strat business planning cycle were, what decisions were made by whom, when. And one of our products that was really influential, a product called TrendSpotter, was super successful there because it went from actually, you know, influencing the start of strategic business planning globally through to a very specific use case on, you know, a specific product in a specific market, spotting which were the up-and-coming trendy ingredients. So that was, you know, a sort of great example of the importance, not of the products. The products were the means to the end. And the end was picking the most influential business decisions that have the highest return on investment that your products can solve.
You tell such a fluent story around that.
You're listening to the Transforming Insight podcast, published by the Insight Management Academy, the world's leading authority on transforming corporate insight teams.
I've written down three questions while you're talking there. The first is about approach and language, because I suspect a lot of people listening will note just how easily you've adopted the language of a product business. Everything that you said there could have been best practice in terms of what Helium itself was looking to do within a competitive marketplace. And you've adopted that language and the principles to thinking about the insight team products themselves. Many other people have been working in organizations where that product language isn't the norm. You know, I'm thinking about public sector or charity or retail or financial services. So was it a big stretch either for you or those around you to start thinking about the output of the insight team as a set of products in the first place in order to ever do this analysis and think in these terms? Or did that seem quite a natural thing to everybody around you?
I don't think it was natural to everyone around me at the time. we deliberately adopted that language. Another part of my role was developing app innovation. So we were quite specific on exactly what we were doing, what the products were, and how we were taking best practice from design research and various other things, agile work, to productize what we needed to deliver. When I look back in previous businesses, I've done similar things. I've just not called it products. So it's always had the same outcome, which is, you know, what Insight comes known for. And actually, in all the other businesses as well that I've worked in, we've always had some sort of branding around the Insight product. We've always called, for example, the brand health tracker, whatever we might call it, or the customer satisfaction monitor, something like Have Your Say. This was a great example of that, actually. We never used the language of products. But actually, when you think about it, some of the products were absolutely critical and applied exactly the same principles, as we did in Haleon. But that was retail. It was a, you know, predominantly one country business. But the products, again, were what the Insight team became known for, because people come looking for solutions, and your shopping list of products can answer a lot of the business questions.
So interesting, because I'm conscious, obviously, I've written a book, The Insight Leader's Playbook. I decided that the 9 P's of The Insight Leader's Playbook would be a useful formula there to introduce in order to describe the key aspects of transforming an Insight team and thinking about that transformation. Of course, if I'd chosen the 9 O's of the playbook, then it might have been outputs, or the 9 S's, it might have been solutions. I like products myself, because I think that the analogy between running a small business or running a business of any sort and running an Insight team is a very useful one. And that distinction between the way in which you prioritize what the team works on and then the product which is presented to the outside organization, and the way in which that helps them to change their perceptions and the profile of the team, and helps them to assess the performance of the team. It works for me as a language, but I don't want that language to get in the way of other people who, you know, adopting the principle here.
It works for me too. I mean, the way that it worked for me was that when you're developing up a product, you have to constantly test and learn. So the agile product development was a really good learning. The product, you need to build a brand. And for a product to launch, you need to consider your launch strategy. And then to continue your awareness. And we actually thought about, you know, what's the adoption curve? Where do we want people to be on the adoption curve? What the KPIs are? And then, are we returning on the investment in this product? So product was the language we naturally defaulted to in Haleon. It worked really, really well. But it is fundamentally output.
Exactly that. And that output, as you say, rightly say, is a means to an end. Solutions to business issues, I wrote down as you're saying that, so it's a great phrase. So second thing, I think about sort of the mix. So in order to bring this to life to people, you talked about your trend spotter. But if you think about the mix of products that was optimal for an organization like Haleon, a global business, versus Waitrose as an example, could you give us an example of, you know, how that mix, or the best mix, might differ across those two?
Two very different businesses, and so the mix does vary. And I think the mix of products honestly depends upon the business you're in and how the business creates value, and what you therefore need to understand about customers in order to create value. So the product mix in Haleon and in Waitrose has some commonalities, absolutely some commonalities. You need to understand future trends, you need to track brand health, you need to understand, you know, your share performance, you need to optimize your marketing, you need to optimize your innovation. But then there'll be differences. So, for example, Waitrose, a retailer, day-to-day customer satisfaction in your stores is absolutely paramount, and was one of the halo products, which wouldn't be part of the mix, for example, at a business like Haleon or a big FMCG business, where you don't have the same type of interaction direct with your customers. So the product mix was different in some ways, but in other ways, super similar.
And so the final piece that I just wanted to pick on there was sort of the way in which the products are packaged at the end and sort of presented to the organization, because I think the analogy works there as well, doesn't it? But understanding audiences and potentially multiple audiences or consumer groups, if you like, for the same product or variations in the same product. How did that play out in those different organizations?
So in Haven, the products, we had beautiful visualizations and we had different levels of messaging for different audiences. So from the very broad right down to the very specific. But everyone knew the word transporter. They just took out of it what they needed to, depending upon either their region, their brand, or whether it was a strategic or much more tactical question. I thought Waitrose, the approach that we had to product there was really, really interesting, because we had one absolute halo product from which everything else spread. And that was our annual customer review. And the reason it was our halo product was it was the state of the nation in terms of what's happening with the market, what's happening with competitors, everything we knew about our customers, their issues, challenges, where to play and how to win.
Was this the piece that led into your customer plan as part of the annual cycle?
Yeah. So it was initially targeted at the board, but then that became the consistent knowledge base and fact pack for the rest of the business. And it was a halo product because the KPIs that had been identified within it were then the things that we tracked and we reported onto the business on a monthly basis. And all of our other products, including I've mentioned earlier, customer satisfaction is key, fed into this. So the halo product was the annual customer review. The monthly board reports were the update on progress. And for different audiences with different needs, we had products that were halo products for them. For example, for all of the colleagues or partners, as it's called in Waitrose, you know, who were managing stores or managing online, the customer satisfaction monitor, Have Your Say, was their hero halo product. But everything fed back up to this annual customer review. And the reason it was the halo product was because it was the one that had biggest impact on the business as well.
Running throughout everything that you're describing here, and again, it's music to my ears, and you know so much in line with how I think about insight. But there's this sense that it's an insight leader's role to manage insight as a strategic asset for its organization. I think it is so easy. So there's no implied criticism from me here at all, but it is so easy as either a one-man band insight team, the insight leader in a relatively small or inexperienced or immature insight team or organization in terms of its maturity of understanding insight and what it can get from it. It's so easy to respond to requests for there to be no overall pattern, really, or no discernible pattern to what work is done beyond what is asked for by different stakeholders at different moments in time. And that is so far from the view of the world that you're presenting of a top-down structured approach to not only which business issues get the priority, which of course we always have to flex around and to be forward-looking around, don't we? That's never a constant. But also how that then translates into a set of products and outputs that the rest of the organization consumes. And I don't want to take it for granted that, you know, listeners will just automatically think that's the obvious way of doing things. You and I think it's the obvious way of doing things because we've seen the success of that. But there's a mind state thing there, isn't there, in terms of what insight can be in an organization and what it means to be an insight leader.
It's also a journey, right? So those few stories that I told you were the result of many years' journeys in those businesses. That's not where insight started off. That's where insight ended up. And so what I would say to insight leaders out there is have vision, but just be realistic about where initially you're going to get the most traction and therefore impact, and keep elevating it up. You know, when I talked about the Waitrose story and the influence that the team had across the business and with the board, it started from marketing and it went outwards. So, you know, if you've got that vision and you are passionate about how you're going to make a change in the business, just keep going with it It is possible. And it is very, very easy to get distracted by, as you say, lots of questions from lots of stakeholders. Very, very easy to get distracted as opposed to take a step back and say, hang on a minute, what am I going to prioritise here?
Think big, start small.
Yeah, exactly.
Thinking about, you've already given insight leaders some great advice there, but if we sort of pull back to where we started the conversation and what we're talking about at Quirks in terms of this moment of this inflection point for, well, both for organisations, frankly, within the wider global economy, but then for insight teams within organisations, for the disruption that's being caused both by near-term issues within different countries and different sectors at the moment, but also in the broader context of AI development and changes in the, what I think of as sort of the information and decision-making environment, which I'm sure we're going to see there. Do you have any other advice that you'd like to pass on?
I mean, certainly in terms of the decision-making environment and AI, I think my other advice would be embrace it and use it to empower you. There is nothing more empowering than being able to do insight faster, quicker, and enabled by tech. So, yeah, my advice there would be embrace AI, use it to empower you, and focus on influencing decisions.
Claire, that's fantastic. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for everything. I know you've been involved with the IMA for as long as I have, so it sounds a bit impertinent of me, thank you, frankly, to say thank you for everything you've contributed to the IMA, because you have led member organisations for at least as long as I have there. But thanks for everything that you've contributed in recent years and your role as an IMA associate as well. It's really valued, and I always appreciate your input on things.
No, it's an absolute pleasure, James. Always enjoy chatting.
So thanks again to Claire. I hope you've enjoyed listening to this episode, another of our extended interviews with senior insight leaders. If you'd like to find out more about Claire's work, about the work of the IMA more broadly, then please feel free to go to www.insight-management.org, where you can always find profiles of all the IMA's advisors and associates, as well as descriptions, of course, about the work that we do to try to inspire and support insight leaders to transform the impact of insight in their organization, in your organization. As I know, many of you who listen are already IMA members and work with IMA member organizations. But if you don't already, get in touch. We've got so much more that we can do as a sector, as a group of professionals, if we talk to each other about best practice, and if we learn from people like Claire, who have experience in so many different organisations in different sectors, but have drawn from that experience principles that can be applied more broadly to all the different types of companies and sectors and organisations that are now embracing insight, and where there's demand for more insight within them. If you've enjoyed today's episode, there is one more to come. Season 10 will close with our traditional roundtable, where Lisa Dutton and Emma Jones from the IMA will join me in thinking about the topics of conversation that we've had with senior insight leaders at the Insight Forums in May, June and July, as well as the Quirks events that we've done in April, May and July in, respectively, get the right order, Chicago, London and New York. So if that sounds interesting, please join us for the next episode of the Transforming Insight podcast. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. Transforming Insight is available on all leading podcast platforms. Subscribe now to get notified when the next episode is released. Check out all the resources in the show notes and sign up to our email list. The Transforming Insight podcast is brought to you by the Insight Management Academy, who reserves the rights to the content. For more information on any of the ideas discussed in the episode, please visit www.insight-management.org.